condition was ill.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 2, NASDAQ Futures up 22 after a rally yesterday and just about everything. Actually, I think you'll say the Dow might have been down, but nobody cares about the Dow. Actually, no, the Dow was almost 600 yesterday. S&P was up 43, NASDAQ up 160. We had gold up, we had oil up, we had everything up, so... Yesterday was a celebration of removing a leader from a country, and we're not sure if there's any end game to this whatsoever, if it's been thought through at all. My suspicion is it has not, because just about every president has never thought through one of these things they did, and this guy, is, in my opinion, is the least thinkable person we've ever had, but that's one man's opinion. All right, we have Professor Carl.
Oh, you do.
What's going on? Do you own the little... what's the name of the hoodie place in Vermont or someplace that now is having huge runs for the hoodie because Maduro showed up in one of their hoodies that evidently a DEA agent gave him because he didn't have one? Orwin or somebody.
Oh, good God.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like the United States doesn't have a history of doing the sort of thing that we just did, right? I mean, it's, yeah. Been one of our historical, I guess you could call it a sport. Whether it should be a sport, it has been a sport.
Always seems to be oil involved, doesn't it?
Well, I'll tell you what, if that is where people want to try to pin this, and I know a bunch of people have, and I've read some of the articles, there's, you know, of course, the latest problem you have is that you don't actually have to think, you just have to find some way to get clicks. So, and you too can put that on Substack and try to make money doing it, or, you know, whatever have you. And I get it, it's, you know, it's the way of the world, right? And then you add this AI thing with your face looking like, oh my God!
Yeah.
You know, as the front of your video is your lead element of your story, and you hope it goes viral. And if it does, well, then, you know, there's your rent for next month, right? And literally, that's about how much it's going to end up being, which... And somebody does, you know, Chief, it's much like the lottery, okay? The lottery is essentially a tax on stupidity, right, for the most part.
No, it's not. It's to compete against the illegal lotteries that were out there before that.
Well, I get that, but if... But
of course,
if,
they paid off way better than the state does.
Well, there you go, yeah. Right? I mean, the thing is that what I always find amusing is that the people look at, like, you know, for example, now Mega Millions is, you know, tends to have larger jackpots. Well, of course, they raise the ticket price to $5, right? And so, but it's, if you are going to gamble, you have to compute the money odds of your wager.
No, you don't.
And
you do, I do, but not everybody else does.
Well, and even when Powerball has a $1 billion jackpot, supposedly, that's the annuity value. That's not the, you know, that's not the cash value.
Which nobody else, if they ever, anybody else advertised that way, they'd be put in jail.
Well, of course they would.
Sure.
All right. So, I mean, you know, but I look at the cash value, and then you have to take out of that the taxes, because, of course, you know, we'll have to pay the taxes, right? So it's the actual cash value. And you look at it, and the money odds still suck. So, I mean, even though it's $1 billion, the money odds still suck because the ticket's $2. And so, now, does that mean that I never play it? Well, no. But when it's a $20 million jackpot, you think I'm forking up, you know, $2 for those money odds? Well no.
We actually went through this. We did a lot of this stuff in grad school, Carl. It wasn't because I think the professors cared so much about the subject, but it was they cared about the fact that teaching people how to think stuff through.
Right. That's actually has value. Right.
Maybe use a little bit of that in Washington, don't you think?
But here's the thing. So the crazy irony of this is that Maduro, all right, first off, for all the people on the left side of the island screaming about this, it was the Biden administration that indicted him. All right. So this indictment's been sitting out there for the last 4 years.
Yeah, but he didn't invade.
Nonetheless, they indicted somebody who allegedly, according to the people on the left, can't be indicted because he is the leader of a foreign country. All right, so he is allegedly, according to their point of view, immune.
What do you mean they? Why does everybody keep using the word they?
Because this
they all think exactly alike? Those are the MAGA people. Those aren't the left. The MAGA people exactly alike.
On the contrary, Chief, within 5 minutes of this thing hitting, the entire media space was flooded with exactly the same story, prepared in advance. And by the way, the MAGA people do the same effing thing, okay? So
yeah, it's crazy.
Please do not think that I am in some way excusing the other side, all right?
Well, I mean, I would say that
I'm not.
I would say right now, I mean, I would do no good.
Let me get my point out.
All right. I know where you're going, but I'm sorry ahead of you. Go ahead.
All right. So they claim that this guy has immunity because he's a foreign head of state. All right. First off, there is plenty of dispute over whether or not he is. America, the EU, the OAS, and a bunch of other countries don't recognize him as a foreign head of state because the last election, they claim, including us, was stolen. Okay? So in other words, he didn't actually win, he cheated, and therefore
I don't think he even won when he cheated. He lost and just didn't leave, did he?
Well, I don't know, all right, but the thing is
there's no doubt he lost.
What happened was that he the whole regime kind of controls everything, you know, like that's where all the money is coming from. So right. Like the media and all that, they're gonna have people just like counting fake tickets, voting ballots or whatever, you know. So yeah, I mean, just everything, the whole media and all that is just he stole those elections, whatever you want to call it. We shouldn't call him a president. We shouldn't call him a leader. He's a kidnapper. He kidnapped the country, right?
So here's the thing. There's plenty of dispute there. All right, first off. Secondly, this argument that if you happen to be a president, whether legitimately or not, or a leader, whether legitimately or not, was run when Noriega got grabbed and he lost. He lost in court, all the way up and down the line, he lost. All right. So now, do I think that we necessarily did any good from a standpoint of the underlying problems by grabbing Noriega? Not really. Okay. By the way, we did a whole lot better job of it this time in that we didn't end up with, you know, 1,500 dead civilians in the process.
How do you know?
I don't, Chief. All right. But just on the surface, this looks like a fairly...
Have you seen any sort of casualty list?
No, and you know what? That's one of the remarkable things is that it was over before it started.
So nobody died.
it appears to have been an extraordinarily precise operation that was pulled off without turning into a cluster bleep, okay, which the Noriega thing did. Now, that may have just have been luck. I don't know. But it does. But the fact of the matter is that the guy's here. He's in custody. All right, fine. Now, but what chaps my ass more than anything else is 2 weeks ago, Trump pardoned the former president of Honduras.
He must have given him a bag of money.
For doing the same thing.
He must have given him a bag of money.
Well,
we're talking about an absolute grifter here, Carl.
I'm just saying, okay, he did exactly the same thing.
I don't know. I guess maybe I'm old school here to the point where I probably should even stop talking about it. But I think the thing that sets us apart a little bit is process.
But it doesn't anymore.
It doesn't. Well, that's a problem for me. It's a real problem.
Well, it's a problem for me too. But you know what? Here we are. Walz has just bowed out, right? He's all right. I'm not running for re-election. But you know what? There's a calculation behind this too, because there is reason to believe that what he intends to do is work with Klobuchar. She's going to run for his seat. Get it. She'll have to resign from the Senate because she's a senator. All right? So if she wins, she has to resign from the Senate. That leaves an open Senate seat, and then she appoints him as a senator.
Yeah.
Which as governor, she would have the ability to do. All right? So, excuse me, but when you preside over what appears to be a racketeering enterprise on American soil, and that is what this looks like, and it's not just in Minnesota. And anybody thinks it is, or that it's a blue state only thing, you got rocks in your head.
Well, here's my line, and I don't know why I seem to be the only person who feels this way. I don't quite know why, but actually, no, there was a Republican senator talking in a speech yesterday about the same thing. There's all kinds of ridiculous shenanigans in this country that you and I both, on both sides, that have nothing to do with good governance.
Yeah.
And yet, but here's my, I don't understand, maybe it's my education, I don't know, maybe it's just the way I was taught. Everything has a basis in what you do. And if you lose the basis, you lose everything. The Constitution, you know, I think a lot of younger people, maybe a lot of older people, and not like I'm 100 years old, they forget where we came from. They forget where people came from, countries that had a bunch of despots that did whatever they damn well pleased and were able to kill people and because they felt like it. And they used the army and other people to do that. And when people came here, they said, no, that's not going to happen. This Republican guy actually gave a pretty good speech yesterday in the Senate saying, only Congress can declare war here. No individual person in this country ever is going to have the ability to just use the armed forces that other people, you know, pay for to do whatever he damn well wants to do, he or she, and go kill people.
But we have.
Oh, we have. But there has been, I understand that there's been acts that give the president emergency powers and all those kinds of things, but now we've come to where there's been various degrees of informing Congress, and that's kind of squishy and so forth. But now we've reached the point where nobody was informed on anything. We've reached absolutely the end of the road. I don't want this guy, I'll be flat out there, I don't want this guy, who I think has real issues, essentially using the most powerful military ever created to do what he damn well pleases. That's a problem. I don't care if it's one person or 500 people or 10,000. I do care if it's 10,000 died on this raid. Nobody gets to do that. At some point, doesn't the European group have a warrant out for Putin's arrest? Isn't that why he had to meet Trump in Alaska? I mean, that doesn't mean you're going to invade the place, but there's a big difference between putting a warrant out for somebody if he ever should show up in Chicago. I got no problem in arresting this guy in Chicago or New York or Puerto Rico or someplace. But going to somebody's sovereign turf without any collusion from Congress, without any... This guy said in his speech, if he'd have made his case, we might have said okay. But he doesn't even feel he has to. That's a problem.
I'll tell you...
You think it isn't?
No, I do think it is. But here's the other... I'll give you the contrary side of the argument, which I think does carry some weight.
Where?
Okay. Well, let me explain it. Okay. Being a sovereign nation means that you have a right to control what comes into and goes out of your country. That it borders, your border is pretty much the definition of a sovereign nation. All right. The United States is allegedly a sovereign nation. We are not under the control of Russia. We are not under the control of Israel, supposedly anyway. We are not under the control of the EU or the UN or Japan or Korea or anybody else. We are a sovereign country, period. Now, if you, as another sovereign nation, and the entities within your sovereign nation that you allow to exist, force into another sovereign country things that that nation does not want.
What do you mean? We must want it. We're buying it.
Whoa. Somebody on the street may be buying it. However, the government, our elected government, says this is a prohibited act.
You think that our government is not involved in this?
No, I'm not. Chief, listen. Look. It is a known fact that the CIA was running cocaine into Miami out of Central and South America.
Without a doubt.
We put people in jail for that.
Okay, so Mexico, if they had the ability, could show up in Washington tomorrow, steal Trump, and oh, by the way, now we get to arrest people's wives too, and steals Melania, and says, you guys have pushed guns into our country. By the way, we don't even have a gun manufacturer down here. And look at the place. It's armed to the teeth. What's the difference?
Well, the difference
is we're stronger than they are.
No, wait a minute. Who went and got the guns and brought them back over there? Was it our people or was it Mexican
nationals? I'm saying we sold them to them for how many years? 100 years?
No, wait. Who'd we sell them to?
I'm saying the somebody here is buying the drugs. Stop it there.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Okay, well, right, you know, so why? Because we don't want to stop the people here.
No, Chief. Look. Let's make the analogies really simple, because it really is from my point of view. All right. Let's say for the sake of argument, the Mexican government gets together with their narco gangs. All right. Which, by the way, I would argue they are in bed with those guys. All right, because it is a significant part of their economy, just like the Venezuelan TDA guys were in bed with the Venezuelan government. All right, they put 100,000 of their dudes on the Mexican-American border and one day storm it. That, I think everybody in America would agree, is an invasion. And however we repel it, we are within our rights to do. Period. Doesn't matter how it gets repelled. Now, wait a minute. Is it different if what gets shoved into your country is a human being or a boatload of cocaine?
What?
Or fentanyl? Right,
wait,
and I would argue the answer is
okay,
no.
Okay, wait a minute.
Now let me back up a bit and put another piece of context on this, because I've argued this for 25 years and nobody seems to like my perspective here. One of the reasons we have the problems we have when it comes to foreign policy and when it comes to warmongering of all sorts, all right, and God knows the United States has been involved in plenty of warmongering, right? Hello, Lindsey Graham.
That's because we sell everybody the weapons.
Well, hello. Well, and not just weapons. We do all sorts of crappy things personally, with personal involvement. Hello, Lindsey Graham, okay? Here is my basic issue with this. Before there was push-button war, if you wanted to go to war in the days of kings and knights, you had to, as the king, get out there and do it. Now, you had the best horse, you had the best sword, and you had the best armor because you had the most money. Okay, that's fine. However, some lucky SOB with a bow on the other side could still put an arrow through your eye slit, and if he did, you died just like everybody else. And you had to take that risk personally in order to prosecute a war.
You mean they didn't have a draft dodger as a king?
No, gee, it didn't. You know, yeah. What? You had to get out there and actually motivate your troops. Otherwise, they would, you know, they sack you instead of showing
you
up.
Know, I'm surprised. I've watched. I've listened to.
So here's my point, Chief. There is now allegedly this international law point of view that the leaders of a nation are somehow exempt when they turn around and tell the 18-year-old swinging dong to get out there. Here's a rifle. Go kill the bad guy. Okay. I reject this out of hand.
Did you?
If you're involved in a conflict, if Zelensky can hit Putin, can actually get him, that is a legitimate military take.
Not according to Putin.
Well, according to me, it is. Well, and by the way, it works the other way around too.
Kind of the people that are the strongest always felt that they get to write the rules, right?
Now hold on a minute. If Putin can get Z, it works the same way. And by the way, if we are involved in a conflict, then if somebody can get our leadership and any of our civilian production that backs that conflict, that makes it possible, because without a plane, without a bomb, without a gun,
this is old school.
Putin
gets the knack off hospitals in Ukraine. And if somebody hits an airfield in Russia, he's outraged. You don't get to do
that. Okay, I said I reject it on both sides.
Yeah.
And the reason I reject it on both sides is I want the circumspection to come back in before people start pushing buttons and killing people. And the only way you're going to do it, is to bring personal accountability and the potential of death back to the table.
Well, that's not going to happen. I'm sure it's there somewhere. You could find it, not me. There somewhere, Michael Moore. What war was this one? It was about three wars ago. We went someplace.
I was going to say Michael Moore has yelled about every war that's ever.
Well, but this was hilarious. I mean, in a sad way, he had a petition. This is before there were all kinds of fences around Congress and stuff. So he's standing up at Congress and he's walking up to senators and representatives, walking in, and he's got a petition. He goes, "I just want you to sign my petition." And the guy goes, "What's the petition?" He goes, "I want the sons and daughters of all the people in Congress to go to war first." And the guy's looking at their face, "Get away from me!" Why do we have every war has several things? Well, like you say, in the old days it didn't. I mean, Caesar actually was on the front line.
Well, because it was the only way he could get his guys to go fight.
Yeah, but now it's a bunch of old people sending a bunch of dumb young people off to fight.
Right.
And that's why young people are dumb enough to do it, where the old people aren't.
Well, my point of view is that this you have to bring this accountability back. It's the only way.
Well, I don't know why I get such pushback from really everybody I talk to, maybe it's me, or on the show. The people who sell us drugs, I don't appreciate that, but the fact is, people here are buying them. In Saudi Arabia, I'm not into if you do drugs, they lop your hand off, but they don't seem to have a problem with people buying it there, do they?
Well, yeah, I mean that is a fair question, right?
Yeah, I was our buddy Robert was retired from the Fed.
Well, go to Malaysia. I think it's Malaysia. If you get caught with drugs, it's an immediate execution offense.
Yeah, in Singapore's. We could do this. I'm not Mr. Law and Order, but I mean, Robert had a whole bunch of shelves, and there's this new group of nuns in this school on the west side that has an orphanage and everything. So we go to give them the shelves, and I got the truck. We drive them out there. It's in this horrible neighborhood, and driving down the street, you see a guy in like an orange, STP jacket in the middle of the street, and he's a drug guy. Okay.
Right.
So, and Robert says to me, if you get rid of this guy, it'll be like another guy. So, Robert, people are not that stupid. If somebody reopened Joliet and we took 10 of these guys, threw them in a squad car, took them to Joliet, and just, they're just gone, right?
Right.
And all of a sudden, another guy pops up, we do the same thing to him. Well, after about a week, and nobody hears from any of these people, now we're not mistreating him or anything, even the dumbest among us are going to say, this isn't the world's best job. And everybody that you have done this to, you put them in a room and you say, I'm not waterboarding or anything. Okay, who's your boss? Can't tell you. Okay, well, you're here for 6 months. If you want to tell me who it is, it'll be 3 months. Up to you. No pressure, no nothing. Well, someplace, somewhere, you might be very surprised at where those names work their way up. And it could be some politician here. It could be some rich white guy here. I refuse to believe that the entire chain is all because of... Or, back in the day, you could have gone to the Board of Trade in one of the bars and walked into the bathroom, and three guys snorting down a thing. All right, guys, where'd you get it? Not telling you. Okay, you're not trading tomorrow. Not trading for a while. I mean, if you want to do this, you can do it. But some people seem above the law, and once you get to that spot... By the way, I'll bet there have been times where you could have done an awful lot of drug goings on with the assistants in the Senate and in the House. Start right there.
Well,
where are you guys getting?
Take a look at this. You just there apparently there's some people digging into this. There's this practice within the political world. It's called smurfing. Now it's illegal, very illegal, and essentially what it is funneling alleged campaign donations into people's campaigns by folks that didn't really make them, but using their identity. Okay, and typically the people whose identities get used for this are elderly individuals who are not technically technologically savvy or whatever have you. Very unlikely to dig around the FEC records and say, hey, wait a minute, what do you mean I made 837 donations to political candidates last week? You know, I mean, but the thing is this, that sort of activity is a crazy felony level violation of federal law. I would, when I was a treasurer for, one of the things about being a treasurer for a political campaign is that you have to sign the FEC reports. All right, and so your butt's on the line, not just the candidates. So, I mean, it is for you
because they didn't like your candidate.
Well, of course, I wasn't. I wasn't a treasurer for a Democrat or a Republican, right? So, you know, they're really going to look at everything, you know, because this is a third party guy. But then again, I'm just not one to play games and cheat anyway. There's no point. I mean, I'm not being paid to do this. I was doing it on a volunteer basis. But what they're finding here is that literally millions upon millions of dollars were smurfed into all of the major candidate campaigns on both sides, including people like McConnell, and Johnson. And there's cross-representation of the treasurers between some of these campaigns too, which is even worse because that implies that this is a coordinated action. Now, the same thing's happening on the Democrat side. It's not on one side or the other. All right. But the thing is this. These are all trivially, if you grab these databases, because this is all public data, you take this off the FEC site, you can download this stuff. You throw this in a database, you do a correlation analysis on it, it's right there in your
Carol,
face.
Carol, I sent you the YouTube study of all the people that made phone calls between the Big Island and the Small Island down in Epstein's place. Nobody's chased those numbers down.
Nobody's chased any of that stuff. Yeah, I mean, this is two years ago?
And this is going to sound harsh, but with the people we've had in charge, that really, in the last however many presidents, have no real respect. I don't think they've really been in charge. That's been the problem all the way back to, I don't know who. I'm not so sure the last guy who was in charge is a president, to be honest with you. And I think we have the point where we are way closer to the guy we just snagged than we think we are.
Yeah.
Where
I absolutely agree. I mean, you look at this thing, this stuff that was going on in Minneapolis, the people that supposedly did the audits on these NGOs, okay, that were getting and distributing this money in these daycares and stuff like this. Yeah, I mean, if you take federal money, the CPA is supposed to, you know, look over.
We've reached the point, and we have now, and I, again, as much as I don't like what's going on now, I think I try and realize that this has been a progression. We have a person in charge and his cronies around him that absolutely think the only law enforcement is the people they don't like and the laws they don't like. It has nothing to do with
the same was true the other way.
Well, without a doubt.
Yeah.
No, every time it's gotten a little worse. Every time the last guy's base level, whether it's Republican or Democrat, that becomes where you start to get worse from.
Yeah, and the thing is that and when you get down to it, if you look at this and the likely level of scam that's involved in all of this, and you back this out over, you know, like the last 20 years, and you realize that all of the inflation that comes into the system comes in from federal deficit spending. You start totaling this stuff up.
Comes in from a 9.9% money supply growth last year. Caused by what you're talking about.
Okay, and oh, by the way, 7% of that was federal deficit addition.
Well, it didn't.
7% of GDP was added.
If you had a real Fed chairman, it wouldn't happen. We don't.
Well, okay, guess what? He's part of it.
Yeah.
But here's it, and so was the last one, and so was the last one before that, and you know, so was Bernanke, and Geithner, you know, I mean, look, you had Geithner in there after he presided over knowing that Lehman was broke for 2.5 months before they blew up.
So what happens if next month when President whatever decides he's going to spend even more money and Powell for his last month says, I'm not helping you?
I don't know. But, you know, I mean...
Does he get killed? Does he get arrested?
This
guy seems to think he has life and death power over people.
Maybe. Well, by the way, Joel's up, so...
All right, bud. We will talk on Friday. I got a couple of good trivia for sports questions tomorrow for Kevin, and he called me, wanted me to reveal them, but I wouldn't. I pled innocent or pled dumb.
All righty.
Which is easy to do for me, by the way.
Well, there you go.
I said, gee, you know, Kevin, I'm getting old. I better take some. What's the stuff you're supposed to take for your memory that's on TV all the time?
B12, if you...
No, the stuff that costs a lot. Prevalence or something.
The hell with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. God. Anyway... All right, we'll talk at you Friday, bud. Happy New Year, even though I wish you that on Friday.
Happy New Year.
Joel, how are you?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday?
I'm doing all right, and I don't know why. I guess we're in it because they're still going. Every day I have this debate with myself about whether I should start leaking my people out of this gold and silver and say, well, I'll give it another day. I'll just roll the puts up, and every day it goes up. I mean, yesterday could have been, you know, we have all kinds of people in all kinds of different places, so I shouldn't. But for the people who last year wanted to be in the metals, didn't really want to be in the, you know, the other stuff went up too. But they had a year like I've never seen. I don't know what I'm gonna do for an encore. Yesterday we made what we had. We had a whole lot of people in GDX, a whole lot of people in silver. They're both up like 350, which used to take 2 years to happen. And we put some people wanted to sneak into oil for the new year with some of the cash they made in the other stuff. We bought some of the XLE, and that thing was up yesterday. I'm sitting there, wait a minute. Everything we're long is up. When does that ever happen? It's nice, a nice feeling, but it's so rare. Wait a minute, everybody's happy. How can everybody be happy?
There's you know, a couple different perspectives you can take on that, and one of course is take partial profits, right?
Yeah.
I mean, which is always tempting to do. Another you know, core strategy, you know, what was your target? You know, what was your expectation, right, for this? So, you know, if it's exceeded or hit your expectations, then it's not a bad thing to do. And the other thing you got to take into consideration is what are you going to do with the money if you take it out of there?
Well, as long as you can take it away without getting arrested, here's my, by the way, Joel, my training in the market is pretty close to yours. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know. You're supposed to have a target. There's a buy price and a sell price. I love your tie. You know, I'll give you $100 for it, but oh, by the way, if somebody offers me $200, it's gone. That type of thing. I look at this and I used to trade like you're talking, and to be honest, I'm looking at it excuse me differently now, because I used to think, you know, back in the 80s and 90s when I was trading on the floor a lot every day, and there were days you went up and days you went down, and there wasn't as much sort of influence. And from a period of time from 1997 to 2007, we did a really great job for everybody. And after that, we didn't do as well, because we were still as concerned, you know, maybe being a little more neutral. We're always slightly bullish, but the march up every year every single year, damn near. There was a couple we were down. I could never quite get my hands around. And I should have used my monetary policy background and figured out why. We were pumping. And I always had the idea that someday, somewhere, somebody would realize that was the wrong thing to do and would turn it around. But they're not doing that. They're not going to do that. Now, this year, I mean, the reason why gold and silver is up and the reason why the market's up is not because you are a genius or I'm a genius. That ain't happening. I mean, as a money manager, I tell people I'm not a genius. I don't know if that's good for business or not, but it's the truth. Last year, the money supply went up 10%. When the growth here is crap. So maybe the growth is 1%, 2%, maybe, which means 9% of fluff is in the place. It goes right in the market, always has. And for some reason, because they're lying about the CPI and stuff, it has not gone into 10-year rates being 12%, which they really ought to be. And now I look at the president, can't wait to get some new one of his buffoons in the Fed spot, because his reaction to this 10%, if I'm in the Oval Office, I'm saying, guys, we're not doing that. We're crazy. All we're doing is inflating people. We're killing people. Killing people money-wise.
Yeah.
His attitude is, I want a 20% next year. I want it to be the Weimar Republic. He wants to be like his German grandfather. I mean, if so I look at gold and silver in the market, and I say, wow, these things are way too high. And I look at these numbers and go, wait a minute. If they're going to put 15% money in next year, or 16 or 20, we're just getting started. It has nothing to do with investing. You know, and unfortunately, this is where I'm at, Joe. I mean, tell me I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am.
Chief, we are in such a different market that you're probably right. Like the rules that applied, you know, in the past, don't so much apply now. Just with, you know, the advent of, you know, high frequency trading, social media, I think you're exactly right. I think it a whole new set of rules goes to the market now. And those rules, there are no rules. I have to agree with you.
I mean, I hope this isn't the future, but I have a vision here. Gotta hope I'm wrong. That these guys, as soon as they get the new Fed guy in, we're going to be on a pace of 12 to 15% money supply growth, which means gold, which is now 4,400 and something, is going to be 6,000 by the end of the year, which it never ever should be. And I think that at some point you're going to see a ten year and 30-year number, 7, 8, 9%, and that's going to crack the market in a way we haven't seen before. Boy, I sure as hell hope I'm wrong. I sure hope I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong.
I can't, Chief. I can't.
And everybody is going to pay off their mortgages on Mar-a-Lago just like they did on the farms in Germany and the Weimar Republic. And they're fat and happy, and they'll be rich, and we'll never be able to. They'll be rich forever, and I think that's what's in their mind.
Yeah, I think so too.
But what about us? Just bring our clients along with us. Is all we can do, right?
Yep. I go with the flow, right? I don't, you know, the news that you had from yesterday. It's going to take a long time to figure out the overall ramifications of it, but. Right now, you just have to gauge what the market reaction to it is, and the market reaction is positive.
What does your wife think about if you get arrested, she gets arrested too? In the world.
You know, we're a team, but we both try and stay on the right side of things.
I'm sure you do. I mean, that's something new. What do you think Melania thinks of it?
Yep. Yeah, but no, Chief. As you can tell, you know, the market action over the weekend, you know, is a little bit puzzling to everyone. But I just think you just have to react to what you're seeing in the market. The market is pursuing this is favorable in just about every way what's so possible. The other thing I would alert our traders and investors to out there is, you know, delayed January effect, maybe. You know, Santa Claus rally kind of mixed results, but we'll see. We did have, you know, some really depressed stocks pick it up yesterday, and
can I ask you a question regarding, it's, you know, kind of Venezuela oriented, but it looks like Chevron's got their first foot in the door as an American country because they're already there. They weren't. The stock was up $10 yesterday and finished up four something, so it came back a little. If you want to invest somewhat in the oil patch of people who are gonna, there's those guys. There's a European company and there's a Russian company that are down there right now doing stuff. Even though the whole complex is pretty much degraded, there's going to have to be some investment. You think new companies are going to go in there, or is this a Chevron?
I don't know. If oil continues lower, I mean, who's going to want to do that? And what are the long term strategies for energy in our country? I'm still trying to figure that out.
I think it's one of mixture, Joel. I saw a couple of tapes on YouTube, and that doesn't mean they're gospel, but we have like 10 refineries that are really set up for the Venezuelan type oil that we used to get.
Yeah, I read that too.
Because a lot of the fracking stuff doesn't match our refinery capacity. It's light.
Yeah, that fracking scare definitely passed. I think just the other thing, and I think why the market is acting the way it is because this could be very strong anti-inflationary.
Inflation is always a monetary phenomenon.
All right, Chief. All right, buddy. I gotta hop.
By the way, who do you like in the college thing? Is anyone going to beat Indiana?
I don't think so. They're so impressive.
I felt when the guy who was taking the speech for the game ball for the offensive line was the senator that came from Notre Dame?
Yeah, I know. You know what, though?
That kid looked like a pro, didn't he?
Just talk to me about basketball. We're a basketball school. Yeah, I got to hop.
All right, buddy, you take care.
Talk to you.
Do we have Kenny?
We do.
What's up, buddy? How are you? Happy New Year again.
Good. How are you? And to you, Happy New Year.
Plus, we're having some decent weather here, too, so it is a Happy New Year now. New Year's Eve wasn't so happy. We had an ice storm, but...
Yeah. Well, listen, I got to tell you, I mean, other than those couple of days down here around New Year's Eve, you know, it's been 75 degrees. Yesterday was gorgeous. Today it's a clear blue sky at 70 degrees right now. It's probably going up to 75. I don't want to rub it in, but it's kind of nice.
Well, you're on the course playing some golf?
I am not out. No, I'm in my office talking to you and doing work and talking to clients. I'm not a big golfer. Listen, I suck at golf. I mean, I'll play, but if you're a good golfer, you don't want to play with me.
You don't want to be in the same cart with you, eh?
I go to the ocean. I like to go fishing. I like to go boating. I like to go sailing. I like to do all that stuff. Certainly, golf is okay, but it would not be my first choice. After, you know, you hit one right off the tee, it's great, goes right down the fairway, and then you get up the second time, and it goes 5 feet. You want to kill yourself. So I don't find it at all relaxing. It gets more and more frustrating, and then the more frustrated you get, the worse you play, which only adds to the frustration. So.
I don't want to see you with your ball retriever over there with some big alligator yeah, swimming by, yeah, you know, and you're trying to fish your ball out of there.
What's going on by you? How was your holiday?
Oh, you know, we had a wedding Christmas or New Year's Eve, which actually was very nice.
Yeah, right. How'd that go?
You know, it was really nice. It was really nice, and a lot of great. You know, a lot of people I've known for a long time I hadn't seen in ages. I mean, it is really stunning how. There's how many people you haven't seen since before COVID.
Yeah, right. No, I hear you.
I mean, they're not people that you would normally, you know, hang out with on a Friday night, but they're people you, at some point during the year, you bump into them three, four times, and you know, they're acquaintances at least, you know, and you just don't see them. Or you haven't, and anyway, it was fun. I had not been to, it was at St. Ignatius High School, which now is, you know, is really the go-to place. I mean, one of the really nice places, and It had really reached the point where it was when I came out of grammar school a long time ago, it was like one building left, and but they've managed to, now they get athletic fields, they get all that stuff, and the church they're attached to, this Holy Family Church, was the one of one or two churches that made it through the Chicago Fire, of all things, 1871. The place is spectacular. The old, you know, everything is the buttresses and, you know, the ceilings 50 feet in the air and all the different arches and stuff. I mean, how people even put those things together 150 years ago, I have no idea, but they did. So, yeah, it was really nice. I mean, there's really nice people and whatever. I had a great time. So,
okay.
I mean, normally, the only thing I was worried about was when we left, you know, It was like freezing snow or freezing ice. I'm thinking, what if I kill myself between here in a parking lot? But it wasn't that bad. But somehow the city, and I don't get this, our genius mayor, they decided, I'm driving home like 12, you know, quarter after 12, expressways were like just jammed because they closed the bridges heading into downtown. They didn't want people to be able to get down. I don't know what the deal was.
But New Year's Eve.
Yeah,
right?
But evidently, but this was
the problems.
But so Ohio Street and a couple other, the only bridges that were open. So people were backed up like three lanes out on the expressway trying to get off the exit there. So I never saw people like double parked on the expressway before trying to get off it. I'm going, some guys are going 70, other people are stopped. I'm going, I got to get out of here somehow. but somehow, you know, I guess there was no trouble or whatever. But you could make downtown Chicago. There's only like one or two streets that come in here without a bridge.
Yeah.
And they come in from the south side. Everything from the north is you have to have a bridge. So what was the movie Escape from New York where they blocked off the tunnels and the bridges?
Yeah.
And nobody, you can do that here as well, sort of thing. But sort of like leaving you on your little island in Florida. They lock off the bridge to the mainland. No Kenny. But I don't think they're doing it. So what do you make of this year? Just my mention of the Joel I did to my money supply thing from November to last number. And the last 12 months, money supply is up almost 10%. And our president wants to put somebody in there to like doubles that. What does that mean? We stay long or what?
No, I think I definitely think you have to stay long. I don't think it's going to be. I think you have to stay long. Well, I think there might be some volatility and pressure on the markets due to the kind of midterm elections. I think the underlying story remains fairly bullish. I mean, look what they did yesterday at that CES conference out in Las Vegas, and that only just begun yesterday. It goes on for another 4 days, but it's all about the technology. And NVIDIA came out last night with a new announcement about their latest platform and what it's going to do. And now it's the fastest chip in the world and what it's going to be able to do for AI and robotics and automatic car, driverless cars and autonomous cars and all that stuff. I think the story is very much alive and well. And so I'm not one to say, you know, it's time to get out or panic or any of that stuff. Not at all. And so I'm excited. And look what happened yesterday. You saw a lot of action in the industrial names and in small caps, right? And the equal weight S&P. Not so much. Tech was up, but it was not up at all as much. Industrial was up 1.2%. The equal weighted S&P was up 1%. And that suggests that the rally is certainly broadening out and that people are finding opportunities well beyond tech. And I think that's exciting. And I think that's going to be the theme. Now, look. Earnings start next week, although the expectation is running high for earnings, right? But the expectation is running high for even what the forward guidance is going to be, right? What are they saying about the next 4 to 6 months? And I think it's going to remain fairly bullish. And I think this week's economic data, right? We're going to get the NFP report on Friday. That's supposed to show 65,000 new jobs and a downtick in the unemployment rate from 4.6 to 4.5. So that does not suggest to me that it's an economy going off the edge or the labor market, you know, the labor market is falling apart. That doesn't suggest any of that to me. So I remain, you know, fairly bullish on the state of the economy. And look, again, everyone's talking about it. You're going to get the added value from now the lower tax brackets that start this year, the big beautiful bill, the no tax on tips, all that kind of stuff is going to start to find its way into the economic data. And so, I think overall it's going to be a good year. I do think there might be some volatility just due to politics, the midterm elections. I think that's mostly in the first half of the year, but I don't think anyone should be surprised if we see a drawdown in the market of, 10 or 15%. I think that's actually would be healthy because we never really got one last year. Other than what we saw in April, but that was quickly after everyone got over that. They look what they did. They took the market straight up with no kind of churning, right? We need more churning, and I think if we get that in the first part of this year, that'll be okay, and that'll be a great opportunity.
So what number are you getting from the government now? Do you believe?
Well, you and I always have this car. I think you have to take them all with a grain of salt. And I said in my note this morning, you're going to get the JOLTS report. You're going to take that with a grain of salt. The non-farm payroll report. Look, we can argue all we want about that. But if everybody's looking at that data point, and everybody's trying to, you know, make assessments off what that data point is, then that's the one you have to use, unless you come up with a new one, and they haven't come up with a new one yet. So while I take them all kind of in stride, I just look for the trend, right? You're not looking for any one number. I look for the overall trend, and are they supportive of each other? You know, yesterday we had the ISM manufacturing. That was weaker. Tomorrow we're going to get the ISM services. That's going to be stronger. And look, we're a services economy. So that number is actually more important to me than the ISM manufacturing number. Although I think the manufacturing number is going to start to turn around as well, because we brought all this manufacturing now back to the United States.
According to who?
Well, according to, what do you mean according to? According to all these companies that have made these announcements about building plants around the country.
If any
now,
of them,
they're not done. They're going to take 2-3 years to build and then to start to work. But the manufacturing is coming back.
Well,
right?
They've had several announcements in the Midwest over the last 10 years, and not one of them that I know of is they're doing anything with.
Okay, that's fair. So to your point, let's just see what happens. I'm kind of in the camp that I think this time it's different. I don't, maybe I'm wrong, but I think this time it's different.
I'm of the opinion, and I don't know, Kenny, you're New York Stock Exchange kind of guy. You're a top down kind of dude. I'm a bottom up kind of guy. I mean, it's just which makes it great for us to talk, by the way. I mean my idea is if this is really happening, somebody who has a machine shop or something here all of a sudden gets himself overwhelmed, where he's hiring a few people and he's looking longingly at the building next door, and he's heading to his bank or someplace and he's getting the money to buy the place next door and he's expanding. I don't see any of that happening. And virtually everybody who's on the show that is in that level, Kevin maybe not so much, because in Indiana is a lot of in the distribution area, and I think they're still doing pretty well. But you know, you're not seeing any of that. The idea that this it's some huge announcement for the Saudis or somebody from Taiwan, I don't. For some reason, Kenny, I don't give that. I see the people here not being able to get the same interest rate as other people. I see all kinds of barriers.
But I think that's true. I don't think it's just true in Chicago. I think that's
what I'm
true
saying. I think
all around, depending on who you are.
But that's the growth. That's the growth where somebody goes from 15 people to 25 countrywide. That's the growth we're looking for. Not that we don't want Taiwan Semiconductor to open up a big plant, but if that's all we're getting is a bunch of idiots with hard hats and a shovel doing the first thing in, then maybe they show up, maybe they don't. I want more of a grassroots. I want these guys to be able to go out and get money at 7-8% instead of 25%, and you know, and I don't see any help for any of that stuff. Do you?
Well, I'm not in that space, so I can't speak to it. I would like to think, you know, if rates are coming down and people are qualified and they've got successful businesses, that they should be able to get the same rate. Right?
You would think, right? Yeah, but I wouldn't bet on it.
Well, you know what? Then maybe you need a new banker. Maybe you need to, you know, do a little bit more homework and see why you're not getting that same rate.
Well, the credit card.
If you qualify, you qualify. I mean, in my opinion.
Well, you're gonna have people say that if they lower the rates 2%, that your credit card rates will come down. Do you believe that?
No, credit card rates will never come down.
That's what I mean.
They get away. I don't understand how Bloomies and Saks and the rest of them get away with charging you 30%. I just don't understand why there's not regulation around
well,
that.
I get
they're risky. I get you should pay a little bit more for having a revolving credit card. But 30%, I think, is absolutely usurious. I think they should all be taken out to the woodshed for that.
What do you think Capital One and those other guys charge? Same thing.
No, I hear you.
Yeah.
I revolving 100%. So I think it's usurious. I think they should all be taken out. I think there needs to be some regulation on that. I get it, and I understand. You know, maybe there's more losses there than you're careful with. Then maybe you shouldn't give those people cards, right? But
well,
they run right out. They give everybody cards, and then they balance it up by charging, you know, usurious rates to protect them against the people that default versus the people that don't.
Well,
right?
what happens, I think, is again, We the people get lied to by the big people that are protected by whoever they're protected by. If Kenny runs out, which I don't think you would ever do, although a lot of people it's because of a you know, an event at home that's not covered, or it's a medical event. I don't think you're gonna go out and buy, you know, $20,000 worth of furniture and just not pay for it. But if you did and your rate was, because you probably got a decent credit score, your rate started out as a nice easy 17 or something.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, the minute you don't make a payment, it's 25. They don't make another payment, it's 30. And now they start adding lawyer's fees on top of it. Well, by the time they write your 20 grand off, it might be 60. So they can come to you in Congress and say, oh man, we just had to write this thing off for Kenny for 60. But the fact is, you only bought 20.
Correct.
So the number they're using is not the right number as usual. They're going to give you the full write-off number.
I would agree. I think the whole thing, like I said, I think the whole thing needs to be reworked. But, you know, that's me.
So what you've got, do you have regular stuff on TV now, or you just got the individual days where people invite you on? Is there times where I can turn to Fox or someplace?
So you can find me regularly on Varney on Friday mornings at 9 o'clock. The other ones are booked, right? So it depends. It's not regular. It's just booked. Next week I'll be in New York, so you know, on Tuesday you'll see me on Big Money. On Wednesday I'm hoping to get on Maria's show, although I'm waiting for a response from them whether or not I get on or not.
I met her once. I liked her. She's very nice.
Yeah, no. Listen, I've known her for a long time. I've noticed since she first came on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange back in 1998, I think it was. She was 28 years old or something like that.
That's the year I met her. I was still on the board.
She's great. Yeah, no, she's great. And, you know, I mean, it is what it is.
Next time you see her, tell her you know a guy. We had a long conversation. We were both, it was a long time ago. I was in a bathing suit and she was in a bikini. She came to a thing in Arizona, gave a keynote speech, did a real nice job, and we were all young. Everybody's out at the pool having cocktails, and came by, and I said, by the way, nice man. She talked to me for like a half hour. She's real nice, and
she's great,
very attractive too. By the way, very attractive. Not that I noticed.
Yeah. No, she's great, and you know, like I said, I've known her for years, so I have a nice relationship with her, and that works.
Well, she will deny ever meeting me, I know, but, you know, I would if I was her, too, you know, just saying. No, but it was, nothing could be better, Kenny. A big whole thing out of with all a bunch of traders and news people and stuff, everybody having cocktails at the pool. It was one of those nice days of your life.
Yeah, I hear you.
Gorgeous sun, everybody went to a... I think we all went to a baseball game that night or something. It was nice, you know. But the industry used to be fun, didn't it?
It used to be fun. I know. We could talk about that all we want. Yes, it used to be fun. It was different then, right?
Yeah, well, people were...
Just the way it was.
And you met some very interesting characters. I met all the people I met from New York. Yeah, because, you know, me being on the marketing committee and stuff, I met all the firm guys. And not so many guys from New York, but from the Amex and a lot of the firm people. We met a lot of people in the Amex. I was on the New York floor maybe twice. I really liked it, though. The Amex, I couldn't get over how dirty it was. There was rats running around and stuff.
Well, you know, the Amex was funny. The building was behind Trinity Church. It was on a different street, and I've only been in the Amex once in my whole life. But the New York was, you know, it was a different place. I mean, it was the people, it was the excitement, it was the personalities. Today, there's all that's gone, right? Because of the technology. So all that personality that made up the floor and made up the markets is gone. So it's a different place. I mean, it's fine, but it's just a different place. That's all.
You know what? Was amazing the difference that things you see. I mean, this is just it may be interesting for some of the listeners. The CBOE and the board at CBOT, CBOE was immaculate. You couldn't eat. You couldn't bring a speck of food on the floor or water or anything.
Yeah.
Finally, they said you could bring bottled water if the top had a squeezy thing, but you maybe get away with some pretzel sticks. But other than that, you were fine. New York, all these guys got big sandwiches right in front of the phones and stuff, and the phone's dropping and the ketchup. And I never saw anything like it. I mean, it was so different than my experience here, you know.
Yeah. You know, it's funny is that you never used to be able to eat on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, like prior to that explosion of the bull market in 1982. Once the market exploded and the volumes exploded and all that stuff, people couldn't get away. And then they started delivering food to the floor of the exchange, and people would eat, you know, in between running back and forth. You'd stuff half of a sandwich in your mouth and run back.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, it was a very, very different place. But that was kind of what made it. That was part of its personality, right?
But you had a lot of four-footed members there. We didn't.
Yeah, there were members that were not nearly as tall, so they get lost in the crowd for sure. One way or the other.
Yeah, you too.
Right, listen, I got to jump.
All right, buddy, you take care of yourself. And right. Happy I'll New Year again. SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 70. Do we have Professor Hell?
Yes, we do.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
What's up, man?
About a week and a half before the semester started, I was informed that public finance was canceled, and I'm now teaching managerial econ. So I've been busting midnight oil can trying to get this class built. And
how the hell are you going to win a Nobel Prize in public finance if you can't teach it?
Well, I'm actually glad I am not teaching public finance because this managerial econ class is really interesting because it's MBA students, and it's more of a interpretive rather than quantitative type course where the managers have to have, you know, it's not economics, it's kind of like a mixture of micro and macro.
Would you consider it business economics or
it's a business economics class, but I think I'm going to teach it from the perspective of a firm that has been established and how they're going to, you know, maybe make the decision to expand or exit. And at the same time, teach it as a way where an entrepreneur can weigh economic and accounting profits to decide whether they're going to jump in the market and supply a product. So
do the people you
that's the approach I'm going
to
take.
Do you think these guys in your class will even know how to do a present value analysis and all those stuff that we used to know?
Well, if they don't, they will, because I build these multi-part projects where I have them build spreadsheets. And one of the spreadsheets will be a decision tree. Another will be a Monte Carlo simulation. And the spreadsheets will vary from student to student because I use an algorithm to vary the data that they use. So I'm gonna teach them how to build like spreadsheet models to help them navigate the class. So they'll build it. Will they remember it? Maybe not. But they'll have an Excel spreadsheet where if they ever have to do this in the future, they can pull out their portfolio from this class and maybe modify and adapt what they did in my class to something that happens in their job.
Do you ever make people? I know this sounds crazy, but do you ever make people, if you have projections on capital expenditures and those sorts of things, actually go back to the individual years and the tables and go through it manually just to get a feel for it?
Yeah, I think the way I do it, in the spreadsheet, I do it that way, where they have to discount each of the cash flows. I mean, I have this spreadsheet model where companies got to decide if they want to proceed with development of a drug, and they've forecasted sales, and the forecast will vary from student to student, with a peak year, maybe somewhere at year 7 or year 12. It'll vary from student to student, and I make them calculate I make them discount each of those cash flows to the present period individually, and then they sum them up. So then when they do that, then they can graph it through time and see what happens. So
for those who don't know what we're talking about, when you evaluate a project, there's two, maybe three ways of doing it. But if you have a target interest rate, then you figure out the returns on the new project, and you get some kind of a net present value that says this project's gonna be worth X to you because it's above your target rate, and you also get a break even time. Some places use a break even time, or it has to pay for itself in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. Then other people have another way of doing it. You figure out what the return is going to be, and if the return is going to be over 12 years, 8 or 9%, your break even, anything over 7, you might say, okay, we'll do. So you can
compare it to just investing in two.
One assumes that you have the same rate going forward. Wasn't done. They're not the same. But we used to have to do it both ways, where we said we don't want anything that doesn't return us at least 12%, because, by the way, we go out and get money, it's going to be 8%, and we want to make at least 50% of what we're borrowing. Okay, that's one way of doing it. The other way is saying, here's your number. We need a positive, a positive net present value. It has to be X number over so many years. We used to have to do it both ways. You know, the year part is always...
They'll be making those calculations in this class.
Well, I mean, because everybody had... We used to have tables. Then, of course, Texas Instrument came out with the calculator. They cost a fortune. And then everybody used their Texas Instrument calculator. I'm not even sure I could even do that anymore, even on the calculator. I probably could still use the tables.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's...
Well, Excel's just a really easy tool to use. And I like Excel because whether you're quantitative or not, Excel's a really ideal tool to use because it's very visual. Like, I don't really like using Python in such a course or a business undergraduate course, unless it's, like, specifically involves coding, because you don't see the data. All you see is the code. So with Excel, you see the data and the results of the calculations, and all the code is hidden. So it's very visual. And then when you type a formula into Excel, and then you click on the cell that contains some numerical answer to the formula that's in the cell, you can actually visualize where that those numbers are coming from, because it'll highlight the cells where it's retrieving the data from.
What would you say to a student that uses Excel to put all these numbers in, and then when he goes to add them up, he grabs a calculator?
Well, you know, Excel's also a good tool for, you know, transitioning you from not knowing much in Python, where maybe you're taking a class.
I don't even know what Python is, so.
Python is a scripting language. It's really popular in
Excel is a way to read my writing better than the 14-column paper.
So Python's really powerful. You can do machine learning. You can do regression. You can do all kinds of things. And the visualizations, the charts that it creates are really impressive. You can build a dashboard, you know, like with tables and charts and scatter plots and whatnot. You can actually build a dashboard in Python. But yeah, it's a really cool tool. And the thing about, once you kind of get the hang of Excel, learning something like Python is pretty simple. Well, it's not simple, but it's if you teach it with Excel at the same time, you can get people on that learning higher on that learning curve quicker.
Kevin says he uses he makes people do at least a little one manually, just to.
Oh yeah. I think it's really important to do it manually. Yeah, exactly.
It's
just a small one.
It's because I mean you ought to be able to do it somewhat in your head, which is really where you want to go. And
I used to do this quite a bit in money and banking. I haven't taught money and banking since 2018.
Well, there's no urgency to it because the interest rates are so low.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if your company has a, well, now of course you and I have talked about it, and other people, everybody has a whole different. That's why, because of my background in this. I mean, I rag way more than I should, and the difference in what a big company or, you know, somebody from overseas, the Saudis or somebody, you know, their cost of capital versus somebody here that you and I drive down the street and might see a small factory or a medical firm or something, the cost of capital is so split between the two, it's really hard for the smaller person to say, well, you know, especially given this today's world, how every month seems different than the month before. And it comes even into what it's the same subject for me, Hal. You know, it may seem to you like I'm skipping around. When we first started our Protected Index program, which is our signature program here at PTI, our whole idea was to buy long-term puts and sell short-term calls against it, because unlike your auto insurance, which, you know, if you buy it for the year, It's the same price basically as buying it twice for 6 months. It might be a little less expensive, but it's not. You know, if it's $600 for 6 months, it'll be like $1,150 for the year, right? It's not.
You're just insuring it.
Yeah,
you're just insuring an investment decision, right?
But when you're doing but options don't decay that way. They decay, not linearly. They decay. Logarithmically. So they decay with the square root of time, not with linearly. So the further out you go, the less your insurance costs in terms of dollars per day. So if you can buy your puts out, say, a year and a half and sell calls next month, time decay is on your side. But what has happened is the movement is going back and forth so much that when the markets were steadier, you might have to roll those puts to adjust their price maybe once or twice a year. Well, now that's happening, you know, my brother says, how far do you want to go out in the putts? I'll go, Dan, let's go 2 weeks. He goes, well, shouldn't we be going further? And I go, Dan, 2 weeks is like four centuries now. It really is. I mean, you could end up having to adjust that putt position two and three times in a 2 week period. Just and by doing so, if you have that kind of movement, you're actually making money on the putts. You know, so that has become more of the strategy than it ever was. But to get back to the other part, I mean, right now, I don't know if you and I had a smaller plant. I was talking about this with Kenny. Right? If you and I had a smaller plant and we saw some, I'll say, stuff coming back from overseas, because that seems to be the vernacular, and all of a sudden we're getting a little busy and a little busier, and we're working a Saturday, and finally you and I sit down and I go, geez, you know, well, I think we need a couple of more guys, because this working Saturdays doesn't get you anywhere. A couple more guys, and you know, that building next door that the guy seems to have abandoned, why don't we ask him what he wants for it, and we could use a little more space too. Okay, but now we're going to have to go and see if we can get the financing, unless one of us, you know, has a bunch of hundos in his pocket, like a real bunch. We're going to have to get the financing. It's going to be some time to get that place together, because I'll bet it's not all set up the way we want it. I mean, you can count on that. Plus, it probably needs a repair. Maybe it doesn't have an overhead crane. Maybe we need one. Well, it's a 6 month to a year project to get started. Well, you need to have some sort of certainty to where when you're done, all of a sudden we can't be buying everything from China again. And by the way, our original business is now sucks. I mean, I think it'd be very difficult for an individual place to make that decision right now. Not to mention, can you get the financing?
Yeah. Well, small business is very difficult to get financing. Yeah. As that article I wrote for Mises points out, where, you know, the big lenders that want to make loans just to very credit-worthy large investors and corporations. And so the small businesses are probably, you know, using credit cards, and hopefully they're paying off their credit card balances by the end of the month. But that's probably what they're doing. I mean, maybe that's one reason why credit card interest rates are so high, is because, you know, most people that maybe use them try to pay them off within the month, and these companies aren't making any money off the lending that they're doing. So they have to jack up these rates to make the credit card business profitable. But that's where small businesses are probably getting their credit from, right?
Well, a lot of them, they make you sign your house in there. Even if you got a plumbing company with 15 trucks and you want a loan for the 60.
Well, those business loans don't count toward liquidity requirements, right?
So, well, I mean, when's the last time
Jeff... I mean, they do. I mean, loans and bonds purchased by banks, but loans to large corporations, I think they count toward the liquidity requirement.
Well, you're not going to get Jeff Bezos to sign a personal guarantee, but they're going to want one
you. Right.
They're going to want one from you.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know you and your lovely bride have a nice relationship, but if you walk home and say, by the way, I just had a pony to house down on my new plumbing truck, you might get a frying pan upside the head, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know if many people use frying pans anymore, Tom.
Well, yeah, it's a lot easier to shoot somebody, I suppose.
But, not like Bugs Bunny, right? Granny?
Well, that's because she was always cooking. It was handy. You know? Now, you get whacked with the cell phone because they're ordering dinner.
Yeah, a cell phone could hurt because it could actually cut a hole in your brain.
Yeah. God. Remember the original phones? Boy, they could hurt.
Yeah, they could, but, you know, they're kind of made of a plastic that would have some bit of flex, but a cell phone hitting you on the edge in your brain,
yeah,
that would kind of probably hurt.
I see you've thought this through.
Oh, yeah.
So what'd you make?
I'm up and down. I'm really moody, but my wife is always in a good mood, which is really
frustrating. People always marry opposites. Is a compliment.
Yeah, my wife is always in a good mood unless I put her in a bad mood. And I know when she's mad, because she doesn't sound like she's from Brooklyn until she's mad. And when she's mad, her eyes cross and she says things like, "Forget about it."
The relationship, the language drops into the. So she can speak Brooklyn.
Oh yeah, and she only speaks Brooklyn when she's mad. Otherwise, she sounds like the most pleasant person you'd ever meet in your life.
And I can't
unless I put her in a bad mood.
I can't do the King's English. It's too much Southside. I can't get rid of it.
She speaks better than I do. I mean,
what
she's,
do you, What do you make of the stuff the last few days and what it might mean for the market? And the main reason why I wanted to accost you from knowledge today, we have plenty of time before the break. I did November to November M2. The November numbers are the last ones we have. And I got it like 9.8% growth last year.
I had it about 4.5% year over year, the last M2 numbers that I did. And I noticed that the quadratic trend.
How can my thing be that far off?
Did you do a month over month or a week over week?
I just did last November to this November.
I tweeted out a chart on Twitter, and what I also noticed is the trend that I've been tracking. It was quadratic, but now it seems to be flattened into some.
Well, I did the world's simplest calculation. How could I have screwed up that bad? I don't think I did.
Yeah, I mean, I could pull it up. Maybe we have different terms.
Well, I got 22.3 of this November, and 21.
I might have 21 for
you're probably right. It looks like we're up $900 billion, which would be about 5%.
I had it about a 4.5.
Yeah, it's about right now. But the last part of the year, obviously, is a lot faster.
Yeah.
Last couple of months, not so much. I don't know where I got the 9%.
But if you plot out the weekly M2.
Anyway, if I said 9.8 earlier, I mean like 4.8.
It was in a quadratic trend, but it seems to have flattened into a linear trend. And I'm not sure why that is. I don't think if there's any supply side stimulus in the big beautiful bill, it hasn't taken effect yet.
There's no
so I don't
such
think
thing.
It's a supply thing.
There's no such thing as supply side economics. It was Reagan.
There's a reason why there's no such thing as supply side economics, because for there to be a supply side effect, Congress
4.3.
Yeah, I have it at 4.4.
Right.
But the reason why there's no supply side effect is because a current Congress can't bind a past Congress, or a current Congress can't bind a future Congress to the things that it does today. If things could be made permanent, like a permanent reduction in regulation or a permanent reduction in the corporate tax rates, then there would be a supply side effect. Otherwise, it's all demand side. So I agree with you, but there's a reason for that. Congress will flip on itself every couple of years.
What did your buddy George Bush say about supply side economics, voodoo economics?
It's voodoo, yeah. But the reason why it's voodoo is because, like I said, for a supply side effect to take effect, what has to happen is it has to be made permanent. And you can kind of see this within the states. Like in Utah hasn't changed its tax code in like 20 years. And, you know, the tax rate is in zero in Utah, but it's been fixed at a low rate for like 20, 30 years. And Utah grows very rapidly. So if you go state to state, some states' fiscal policies are more permanent than others. Where, like in California, you know, they have they have more of a democracy where the voters get to make decisions. And when you have a situation like that, and politicians doing the Keynesian shuffle, raising and lowering and constantly raising and lowering their tax rates, you don't see as much of a supply side effect. But in states that kind of set it low and leave it, I think they grow relatively faster. So at the federal level, you're not going to see a supply side effect because that policy has to be made permanent. Otherwise, it's just demand side stimulus.
Well, I'm going to say last year the growth in the country was virtually zero.
Well, if the inflation rate is 4.4 and they're saying growth is 4%, yeah, it's zero. Yeah.
No, I'm saying
I have inflation running around 4 to 5% right now.
That's what I'm saying. I think our actual growth is zero.
Yeah.
And maybe I don't even think it's even.
Yeah.
But I will say that because of the
I would say growth for the elite economy is doing very good. I would say growth for the bottom 80% is probably on the negative side,
but
given that
inflation. But define. But you know, it gets so difficult to do this, Hal, because I'm going to say that if you look at the medical side, say the cost of a physical, I think is up substantially. I'm going to say
it depends on what industry you're on or what neighborhood.
But even every one, I mean, it is so difficult to gather up if you go to a high-end restaurant or bar, a one-percenter bar, you're gonna the guys, you know, the guys or lady, whoever owns the damn place, they may say business is up 12%.
Yeah.
How do we know if the price of drinks didn't go up 20%, they actually sold less drinks?
Yeah. Well, the owner of the bar would know that, right?
Right, but I mean, how are we going to know that? People used to, that used to be part
of. We'd know it, Tom, if you go in there and they do a fancy pour. Those fancy pours mean they're putting very little alcohol in the drink.
Well, okay, but you and I would notice that. But
yeah.
When this, the first go around, well, not the first go around, because God knows it was the Roman times, inflation, but in the late 70s, early 80s, they would have, people were very attentive to what you and I are talking about, where they would actually say, you know, General Motors sold, their sales were up 10% from last year, but the actual sales of cars was down 2% or up 3% or 4%. They would actually give you the numbers. They'd give you the total price
units
of
sold.
They'd give you the price of the widget sold, then they'd give you the amount of the widget sold.
Yeah.
And which is, you know, it's complicated to do because every drink's not the same and every dinner's not the same. I mean, I get that part, but I'm going to say that less people had physicals than have doctors last year than the year before. So if you tell me the medical area is up 12% in income or in revenue, I don't know what that tells me. Like, you know, what if the price of a physical is up?
It tells you that it's the output of that industry is probably down and the prices are way up.
Yeah, it's what, but how do I know? I mean, I'm lobbying an opinion out there.
Well, that's the problem with
all these.
If
somebody disagreed with me, how do we figure out who's right?
Well, that's the problem with all these price indices. They're just flawed because people make substitutions. The baskets aren't updated often enough. And then you have the subjective components like housing. And then the medical component is just, you might as well just strip out the medical component and the housing component from the CPI. Because, you know, if people in the Bureau of Labor Statistics like the president, they can fudge those numbers. If they hate the president, they can fudge in the opposite direction. Those numbers are so subjective.
What do you mean the president is in control? He fired everybody.
Yeah, but still, I mean, you can't, a president can't control every member of
he's
the
trying.
Workforce.
He's trying.
I know, yeah, but, you know, and, you know, previous administrations, I would say that most people that work for government live in a capital city or the nation's capital. They're probably, you know, I doubt they're independent from what Democrat politicians want.
Well,
I'm
not going to ask Ricky to play the Andy and Mayberry, yeah. But when I was involved heavily in the CPI stuff when I was doing the contracts for Pullman, there was never a hint. Never once did I hear if, you know, everybody knew the inflation was bumping along, it was right in your face, right? You know, it was 10-11%. It was right there. Everything was going up 1% a month. And you'd get the number from Washington, and, you know, it might have been 0.9 or 1.1. Nobody ever said, boy, that number is bull. I mean, it was right where people thought it was going to be. Now, it had a little bit of a lag time, which I never really understood. It took a while before it made it into the numbers. And then at the end of the inflationary era, or what we thought was the end, it took a while for the numbers to tone down. I mean, inflation had, for any kind of observation, had really stopped 4 to 6 months before it stopped percolating its way through the CPI. But nobody ever had. I mean, you and I have talked, and Carl as well, on many occasions, that if we looked at the CPI, we'd say, okay, where are the two biggest bombs? The two biggest bombs are in medical and in housing. Yeah. And the reason why there are bombs in medical is they've got it 6.5% of the economy, and guess what? It's 21%.
Well, it's also the way they calculate it. I mean,
okay, but I'm saying they got a 6% of your basket.
They use a margin or a profit calculation.
But it's, well, that even makes it even worse. But, yeah. But by and large, it's 21%, not 6. And then they use this owner's equivalent rent that's up. I just went through this not too long ago. It's up, it's like doubled in the last 15 or 20 years. And actually the real number, if you look at taxes, you look at insurance, and you look at housing prices, it should be up, you know, almost triple. So these guys did this big study about the CPI, or individual people, and the costs that are bothering them the most, guess what? Medical and housing.
Yeah.
But even simple stuff, Hal, you wonder when you have these kinds of moves.
Well, we should scrap the indices altogether and just use a smooth M2. That's what we should do.
You and I know that that's where it gets to. Yeah. But even simple stuff, like not including taxes. Now, in Chicago, somebody's property tax rate just went up from, some people told me that they were 15 last year, now they're 21.
They raised their property tax rates.
Well, I'm saying it. But
I wonder if they had to do that because property values aren't rising like they used to.
They're doing it because everybody's left downtown and manufacturing's left.
Yeah. So the value of the property's lower, so they need to raise the rates.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm saying whatever it is your bill.
New York doesn't have that problem yet.
Well, they reassess. Whatever it is, they just raised it. They raised the bill. Who cares how they did it? But the thing that's surprising that is things they never pick up. I mean, if you were to say, okay, the price of a new car is up 10%. All right. Well, what are we missing here? The tax on the new car is 7%, right?
Yeah.
So it really is, if the car goes up 10%, it's really 10.7, right?
Well, it depends.
You got to pay the taxes.
Yeah, but I think you have to pay the taxes, but did the tax rate go?
But I'm saying it doesn't matter. If the car is 90 grand, yeah. You know, and you're paying 7%, what's that? You're paying $6,300 in tax, right? If I'm doing my math right this time?
Yeah, that sounds right, yeah.
Right, so now the price of the car goes 100. Now it's 100,000, it's 107,000, right?
Yeah.
It's not just the 10.
From
it's
from the tax value, yeah.
I mean, because it's that big of a chunk of your house. I mean, Nancy was just telling us that she's, you know, it happens where all of a sudden somebody's, you know, they approve a loan and somebody's the business of getting their closing together for their house, the taxes go up and all of a sudden it's, and the guy I talked to last week at the dog park of all places, his daughter said a couple years ago she bought a place in the north side of Chicago. She's doing fine. All of a sudden her tax rate went up $5,000. He goes, well, she doesn't have $450 a month.
Yeah.
I mean, is she going to sell it or what's she going to do? People just don't have it. I mean, so now, what does that mean? It's not even in the CPI, is it? Taxes aren't. Yeah. I don't think.
Well, I think the CPI, no matter who calculates it, whether you think Democrats are better at calculating or Republicans are better at calculating, or economists that favor Republicans or economists that favor Democrats, every PhD that doesn't end up teaching probably wants to work for some firm or some politician as a consultant. So they have to. They're drawn to people who share their ideas, so their economics are going to skew toward that way of thinking. So no matter who calculates it, it's a flawed measure. And what we should be using is M2, subtracting out population growth.
You know, we got to go to break here. You know what's so funny is you're a little bit younger than me, and you, I won't accuse you of this, but I'm going to say it seems to me you're halfway between my generation in the younger generation, moral relativism. We don't like the number, we'll change the number. I mean, I'm telling you, when I did this stuff, people in Congress, even guys like Tricky Dick Nixon, would never have considered screwing with the CPI numbers.
Yeah.
That's just something you didn't do. I mean, now it's like, why not? What's the problem? What do you mean, what's the problem?
But Tom, the world is now different. We have social media that silos us in one camp or the other. And if you're not in either camp, then you have no following. So
I get that part. I'm saying at some point, I mean, when you
back then we had one news media essentially, right? We had the evening news on the four networks. Now we have hyper-partisan cable news, and then we have the siloing of us on X and Twitter. I mean, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and whatnot.
But we're
siloed into our personal echo chambers.
Well, but politics at its base level, and again, I try to put things down at base level.
And politicians are no different, Tom. I mean, Republicans tend to go on Fox News, and Democrats tend to go on the other networks.
I'm talking about before there was Fox News.
Hard questions.
I understand where you're coming from. That's today's world. I'm saying I'm not real happy with that. I mean, when you have politicians, say you're running for mayor, all right, and I'm running for mayor, and you're running. Without all the other kind of crap politics we got in there, basically we're running where we're going to manage all the things we have to do for the city, for X number of taxes, and we're going to do a better job. And you're going to say, I'm going to spend less on parks and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to say, well, I want nicer parks. But what, at the end of the day, it all comes down to management efficiency and what I well, promise versus...
But that is an existent politics, Tom.
It does at some level. We're not at that level anymore. But I'm saying... Of all of
well,
a sudden,
that's an argument for government should be at the
okay.
County
but what I'm saying, what I'm saying, what neither one of us, in my day, would ever think of doing, is saying, okay, I'm in office, let's make it sound like people's taxes are lower when they're really not. I mean, nobody would take the city's revenue numbers and just change them. Oh, here you are. Look at how much we're making
well,
when
hey,
we're not.
D.C. lost its police chief because
they were
underreporting crimes.
What I'm saying is...
So it happens at all levels of government.
Okay, but where you're at on this, I honestly... We'll take a minute before a break. I can't get my arms around. There's certain things that you... I mean, if a guy goes to go out to try out for football, he's either 6'4 or he's 6'2. He doesn't get to say what he feels like he is. It's somewhere along
coaches inflate those numbers.
They do. But my point is, you are what you are.
Dean was never 7 foot one.
So what you're saying is, you're saying nobody has any responsibility to make any number that they give anybody. I think that the
government. Tom, we're in a world where if we feel like we're a tiger, we're a tiger.
I understand that, but it's not my. So if we go to war again, which we seem to want to do every couple of weeks, are we going to start lying about how many people got killed?
Tom, there was a woman and there was a white woman in Spokane, Washington, who claimed she was African American. So in our world,
I'm not talking about what individual people will do. I know people here in Chicago that have had minority contracts their whole life. They aren't even black.
Yeah, I know.
You know, but the point being is, are we going to start lying about how many people got killed in World War II? I mean, the government their job is not to lie to the people who put them there. I mean,
I read something about 20,000 American soldiers were captured by the Soviets, by Stalin, and they just kind of disappeared during World War II.
Okay, whether or not there have been instances of it, that's the difference between my generation and yours. Because
Tom, I think the government is lying.
Okay, because
the government has been lying to us for over a century
What your message to people, even though you're probably not saying it, your message is because it's happened, because I couldn't believe people in the past, it's okay to keep going like that. That's not my message.
No, I'm not saying it's okay. I'm just saying, hey, it's happened.
Okay, I understand.
If you think it's not happening, then I got some swampland in Florida that you want to buy, and I'll call up.
What we're missing in the debate, and a point I'm having trouble making here, is I could have 15 conversations.
I'm not saying it's okay. I could
have 15 conversations with people like a man with you right now, and 14 of them, the other person takes the exact same. Oh man, I know a guy in Alabama that stole four cars. Okay, what does that mean? I mean, it's still not right to steal a car. I mean,
oh, it's not.
Somehow this all gets glossed over that because it's happening all over, it's somehow justified. I mean,
I'm not justifying it, Tom. I'm just saying, you know, if it's not happening.
I don't want to get to if we're not cheating, we're not trying, and I think we're there.
Well, I think we've always been there.
I don't think so.
I think we've always been there, Tom.
Anyway, SP Futures up a whole two. NASDAQ Futures up 53. We'll be right back to fight with Hal as soon as we're done with break.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howe. Ricky on the board, listening to all this. SP Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures up 51.
Ricky,
are you a moral relative? Are you a moral relativist?
Me?
Yes.
He is?
Oh. I don't know what that means. I'm sorry, man. English is a second language.
No, I mean, if you go somewhere and you see somebody boiling somebody's head in a pot, you say, well, that's what they always do. It's okay for them?
No, I wouldn't say so, actually. No.
To boil a head in a pot, I'm just saying it has happened and it will happen.
I understand. I'll tell you about a contrary guy like you I was talking to last night as soon as I'm done with this.
Oh, I'm definitely a contrary.
Oh, yeah.
I've been
this guy could be worse than you. think, but neither one of you, it's impossible to agree with you. Anyway, let's go over to Europe. DAX up 79.3%. FTSE up 100. That's a full 1%. Wow. Parcel locker firm InPost. What the hell is that? What do they do? Anyway, CAC around down 13. So a little mixed in Europe, but pretty much to the positive. I don't know why CAC is the other way. Over in Nikkei up 655, 1.3. Again, these guys are a little catch-up because they were off a few days, but still, that's a big move, 1.3%. Hang Seng up 363, 1.4%. Even the Shanghai up 1.5. Asia markets open mixed after record global stock rally. All right, well, they weren't mixed. They opened mixed, but they sure as hell didn't stay there. Bonds, unchanged, 4.17. Oil, up 26 cents, but all this craziness about oil, it's still 58.58, right where it's been like forever. Gold, up another 17 bucks, 44.69. Silver up $1.50, 78.87. That's been the big mover. I would not have guessed out of gold, silver, and copper that silver would be the horse, but it sure is. Copper's up 6 cents. That's a full 1%. It's over 6 bucks, 6.03. Foreign exchange, euro right where it is, 1.17. A British pound, 1.35. That's the highest sterling has been since mid-September. So it's up. The pound is up against both the dollar and the euro. Now, don't forget, that just because I keep talking about dollar versus them, they also move between each other in the end. There's like four of them interplaying here. So it's not just us, guys. Crypto, down 631, but still 93,658. That's 10,000 higher than where it was a few weeks ago. Ricky, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Hey, morning, Chief. It's 7:40 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 43 degrees right now with a high of 51. Spotty drizzle this morning, otherwise mostly cloudy. Tonight we have low clouds and a low temperature of 33 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 50 degrees right now with a high of 71. Mostly cloudy and pretty comfortable today. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 50 degrees. Traffic in Chicago is looking a little messy right now. There's an accident reported westbound on Kennedy at Costner Avenue, exit 43D. Left center lane is locked, so expect some delays. Additionally, heavy traffic eastbound on Kennedy. Eden is a little congested. Eisenhower is backed up on both directions. Heavy traffic eastbound on Stevenson. And finally, accident reported on southbound on Den Ryan at 47th. So watch out for that. Let's talk sports real quick. This Saturday, January 10th, we have the start of NFC wildcard playoffs with Rams visiting Panthers at 3:30 p.m. And the same day, we have Packers at Bears at 7 p.m. Lastly, NBA, Bulls lose to Celtics yesterday 115-101, making it now 6-4 out of the last 10 with a 2-loss streak. Suns lose to Rockets 97-100. And that's all I got for you guys. Back to you.
I know, Hal, that I'm old school when it comes to certain things, and I think when government puts out numbers, I don't want the Congress to influence the Office of Management and Budget, because guess what? 5 years from now, you and I are paying the taxes, and the Congress people maybe aren't, or maybe they are. But I mean, I think there needs to be some truth someplace, or else we kind of disappear. So get a load of this. Last night, nobody needs to really know what we had. Yet another episode in the last 6 months. Hal, I've been involved or close to, when I say involved or close to, in buildings that I inhabit, five crime episodes, 6 months. That's pretty good, right?
Crime episodes.
Well, there was the people who, in my alley, who managed to deface the school with paint behind my place. No, they didn't do it to me. Then some people came over the fence and broke into my garage and in my truck looking for a gun. It's in a nice neighborhood.
Really? Wow.
Now, Christmas Eve, somebody came by and busted out maybe 10, 12 windows on the street, or maybe 7 or 8. That wasn't fun. And, you know what, Al, I'm not a violent guy. Once in a while, you just want to beat the crap out of somebody. The people next door had a doorbell camera, right? So we catch these guys. There's like three of them walking in one little car creeping with the lights out. One guy shines the flashlight into this car to see if there's anything in there worth taking, right?
Yeah.
And he doesn't see anything. He breaks the window anyway and just keeps walking. Hmm. Now, if the guy couldn't feed his family, not that it's an excuse, and saw a cell phone in there and grabbed it or something, I still wouldn't justify it. It's still a crime, but the idea that even if he didn't want anything just to make somebody's night miserable, yeah, you really hope that somebody, you know, a swift kick in the nuts or something would come from somewhere, wouldn't you hope?
Yeah.
Well, then the building here, a month ago, they got robbed downstairs in the bar. Somebody busted through the back window. And now this weekend, Saturday night, get a load of this. A couple of guys show up. They lasso the fire escape down. They go up the fire escape onto the roof. They must have brought all, like, window washing equipment with them. Because they hoist themselves over the wall. They're hanging and put this massive piece of graffiti. They were here 3.5 hours.
Wow.
And so I mentioned this last night, having a cocktail like I do every Monday night with my gang. And one guy's like, well, they think they're artists. What's the problem? And I go, what do you mean, what's the problem? They broke and entering. You know, they're on somebody else's roof. They went down there and they defaced their building. Well, yeah, but they think they're artists. I said, I don't give a crap what they think. I mean, I'm wrong now for even. I don't care what they think they are. They might think they're abolitionists. I don't care. But how do you get to do this? And other people, what's the problem? What do you mean, what's the problem?
Yeah. Well, the problem is that once government stops doing what it should do, one of the things it should do, in my opinion, is protect people's property.
Yeah, and people. And people.
When government stops protecting people's property, then one property crime begets another property crime, and over time, those property crimes get bigger and bigger and bigger. So.
And everybody will say, and I'm not saying you did this, but we'll say, God, somebody busted my driver's side window. Oh, yeah, well, that's no big deal. Last week, somebody busted all the windshields on our block. Wait a minute, does that reach the point of justification? Because you can name something worse.
Oh, it's a big deal. It's a big deal when it happens initially, and it's a big deal when it happens to you. It's a big deal because somebody's violating your property.
Well, the guy downstairs, the people who live downstairs, they had it happen to them. So I'm going to say I saw maybe 5 or 6 on our block. So the dude, I mean, he found a guy. This guy says, be here by 1 o'clock to go get it fixed on Christmas Eve, which I never dreamed he would be able to find somebody, but he did. He gets there, 16 cars waiting in line. So evidently we weren't the only block.
Yeah.
So I called 911, and the cop's like, well, are they still there? No. Okay. They weren't even going to come over and look. Yeah. They could care less.
Well, in San Francisco, they have all kinds of property crime with vehicles parked on the street. The city officials tell drivers not to have anything showing or anything of value sitting in open, you know, in the seats.
Well, that's only common sense, but My buddy John Lee was on yesterday. He lived in Singapore for a long time, and this is talking about this earlier with Carl, and he said, this is an interesting view of the world. When John went to Singapore, because he was involved in all this consulting work over in that part of the world, he said it took forever. He was there a long time, so he sent over like his tapes of movies and stuff. We didn't get them for 4 or 5 months, because they had to watch them all to make sure there was no porn on them.
Yeah.
or hoping there was.
Well, they were hoping there was so they could watch it and then not give it to the public, right?
Well, but he
that's what Kim Jong-un did.
Well, I don't know what the logic was, but he says, I'm reading the papers there, and I can't stand it. The fact that it's a repressive regime, and everything is kind of... And about a year later, he says to me, I never thought I'd say this to anybody. But, you know, John and I have been friends for 50 years, 40 years. And he goes, I am much freer there than I am here. And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, never lock the door. I could leave a computer on the seat of my car, the window open for a week, it'll still be there. And my kids, they were like 10. They go, they'll take the bus or a cab over to their buddies to study and come back and they're 10 years old. I don't worry about them a second. He goes, I'm way freer there than I am here.
Yeah.
And now here, it's your fault. You left that computer there. Where did we ever get this mentality? Yeah. I don't get it. And you can see it in business. You surely can see it in politics. You can see it in the White House.
You know, I think that's one thing that Giuliani did right in New York City, right? He busted the small crime. He enforced the law. He busted the small crime. He got rid of the squeegee guys.
Yeah.
And when you do that, when you prosecute the small crimes, it's like when you punish a kid for telling a small lie. If you don't, the small lie turns into a bigger lie, and then that lie turns into an even bigger lie, and it grows geometrically, and the person's a POS in 20 years, right? So I think that's, I mean, government's job, in my opinion, one of its primary jobs is to protect people's property.
And to protect the people.
If it doesn't do that, then crime gets out of control.
Well, I think it needs to protect the people, too.
But if your property's not being protected, are they going to protect people? No.
Well, you end up, if they're not going to protect, you end up having to protect yourself, and that's why we have
this is one reason why the Gaza Strip ran through the wall in Israel on October 7th is because they had, 40-50% unemployment?
Yeah.
The Hamas authority, the Palestinian authority run by Hamas, wasn't protecting people's property. If property rights aren't being protected, nobody's going to invest, and you're going to have 40% unemployment.
Well,
so you have in New York City, when you allow people to walk into a Rite Aid or a Walgreens and take under $900 in goods, guess what? Eventually, those pharmacies either lock everything behind plexiglass. Yep. Or they close their doors. And that's happening in San Francisco. That's happening in L.A. That's happening in New York. Probably happening in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Hey,
you have to protect property.
You're hanging around with all these economists all the time, boozing with these guys and so forth.
Well, they let me call myself an economist, but they won't invite me to their tea parties because I'm not a mainstream economist.
Well,
by far, my
question is, we have had the last couple of days after what happened this weekend.
Tom, the only tea party I'm allowed to go to is the one sponsored by the Neil Clostrian School, and I'm the president, the only member.
I'm
going to
say it's got to be a small party.
It's a party of one.
My question is, and I would love to find out, and who knows? Maybe, Ricky's not from there, but he might know. What we've brought it up, not every day, but every couple of months. I'll say something like, what do you suppose life is like in Gaza or Venezuela or someplace where they really have no currency, nobody has a job? Although I was reading that the unemployment rate in Venezuela is like 5% only, which I don't see how the hell that can be. Yet 80%
of they don't have a labor force, I can see it.
Well, but they, I mean, how they count it.
And it's probably a fudge number just like in Greece.
But I'm saying 80% of the people are in poverty. Yet they claim 95% are working. I mean, one of those numbers is something's wrong. But
those 86% people that live in a poverty are probably working four jobs, right?
Well, I don't.
Like in Cuba.
But how do you,
mother-in-law told me this. Her friend Carol, who is a world traveler, she used to work with her at Brooklyn Hospital. She went to Cuba and she was telling my mother-in-law that the guy carrying her bags to her hotel room makes more money on tips carrying luggage to the hotel rooms. Than he does as a medical doctor in a freaking month.
I'm gonna say that's a premier job, carrying the luggage.
Yeah. Oh, taxi cab driver and carrying luggage is a premier job because Americans come to visit and they tip.
All right, but what I'm trying to get at, if you know, what is it even like living in? I mean, how do you? You get on a bus. There's no real money. So how the hell does anybody pay? And if you don't pay, is the bus driver getting a check or not? I mean, I guess I'm trying to get some kind of an idea. Of what's it like? What's a day like in Caracas?
You know, it's hard
for me
to even comment on that because I haven't been to a foreign country since I really left the Navy. I mean, I did go to Paris. My wife and I went to Paris for a honeymoon for a week back in 2008. That's the last time I've been out of the country. So I'm probably not the one to ask. I do have a friend named Rob who's now divorced, and he travels extensively to Colombia all the time. He's probably in Colombia three times a year. And I don't ever hear him talking about riding a bus. I think he takes cabs. So.
Okay. But I'm saying when the currency essentially falls apart, I mean, do the people who teach in school, do they get a check? I mean,
They're probably using dollars, and they're probably getting those dollars from tips from American tourists.
Well,
or
whatever they're getting. I'm saying, when something starts to fall apart like that, we're so used to here having most things work. You go get on a bus, the bus shows up, you put your whatever you put in there, now you got a card now, but the guy gets paid, he says hello, when all that stuff degrades to where it isn't, how do you get the work? Is there work? I mean, I guess these are questions I just have and don't have the answers
to. Like in Haiti, for example, the banking industry was very sketchy, so a lot of Haitians that I know, they use susu funds, where they pool their money and then they share it for emergencies. For, large-scale emergencies.
So that's like their own insurance policy.
Yeah. And then on Flatbush Avenue, I think this is probably a cultural thing that was brought in from a country where the currency wasn't very, very good or whatever. But they have dollar cabs, unlicensed dollar cabs, that just scream up and down Flatbush Avenue. You jump in, you give them a dollar. So I think there's probably two forms of currency flowing in these countries. There's the currency where you pay your taxes, which is the one that's being inflated. And there's all the dollars that are floating around. And they're probably using dollars, I would suspect. To make most
what of was it, what they used to call a cab zero? The name here was a jitney cab.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're dollar cabs because you just give the driver a dollar. It's an unlicensed cab. And there's a, my mother-in-law has a rental property on, it's called Kenilworth, but they call it Kennyworth. And the guy lives in one of the houses there, and he fixes these, like, former airport shuttle vans. They're all beaten up, and he probably buys them for $2,000 on auction. And then he repairs them on the street, Kenilworth Place, Kennyworth, in Brooklyn, near Brooklyn College, and then probably sends them out onto Flatbush to go up and down the avenue all day long and give people rides for almost nothing.
Well, I mean, we would do that. People did that. When I was very young, I actually drove a cab for a summer. It was interesting, but the
you probably did really well with it.
It was an Evergreen Park. It was Evergreen Park. So I didn't, you know, but
people probably enjoyed your cab, Tom. I suspect that they would.
They sort of did, but what the jitney cabs would do, if you had like some big car, like a Continental or something, you'd see all these people waiting for the bus, and you just pull up and say, I can take four, and instead of giving the bus, you know, the $2, they gave you the $2. You just hustle the people downtown and you'd go back. So you essentially were stealing the bus thing. I mean, they weren't gonna call another cab, but you were essentially stealing it from the CTA. You did well on like rainy days or hot days or something. And you know, when you have the old cabs, when you got in there, they always had the meter.
Yeah.
And when the person got in the car, you took there was a metal thing sticking out of the meter that stood straight up. And when somebody came in and you had a driver in there, you'd punch the time, and then you'd put the meter down, is what they call it. I don't know if you remember that or not. But the reason why you did that was to stop cab drivers from stealing from the cab company.
Mm.
Because when my deal was, I got 40% of the meter plus tips. Okay, well, it would be easy. I mean, it didn't take a genius to say, okay, the ride's normally $20. Well, it was a long ride in those days. The ride's normally $20, and I'm splitting it with those guys. How about we do it for 15, including tip? You know, that kind of thing. Well,
yeah.
You couldn't do that because if a policeman saw you with driving with somebody in the back with the flag up, they knew you were cheating the cab company and they'd pull you over.
Yeah.
The police were the cab company's enforcers, which is, how bizarre is that?
Well, the cab companies have a monopoly on taxiing in most cities, right?
Well, but also
the medallion, those medallions are very expensive.
Well,
and they want their monopoly protected. They don't want competition.
I'll give you my best New York cab story, right?
They don't want competition from a tax cab driver named Tom who's, you know, being independent.
Well, being not giving his people. I'll give you a feel-good story. It was a long, long, long time ago. I was on the board. I went to New York. And I get in the cab, and there's this old, I mean, you know, pretty older. Well, I was young. This older black dude driving, gray hair and all this stuff. He starts BSing with me, and he goes, where are you from? And I said, Chicago. And he goes, by the way, who was the first resident of Chicago? And I go, that was easy. That was what was the first guy's name? A French first name, DuSable. He's an African-American guy who was actually the first citizen in Chicago. And he goes, I've been driving a cab for 50 years. You're the first guy who's had the answer to that question. You know? So we start BSing back and forth. And all of a sudden, I said, you know, what are you doing still driving a cab? The guy is real sophisticated. He goes, you know, I retired. I live down the block from the cab company. He goes, we got a place somewhere south in the wintertime. He goes, but, you know, I don't know about you, but when you got a wife, even if she's the best lady on earth, you're just
you don't want you around all the time.
You're just not supposed to be there 24/7. No, she's got her stuff to do, and she's got her routine, and even if it's a couple days a week. So a couple days a week, I walk down the block. I say, hey, you got a free cab, and I hop in. And today's one of those days. They start showing me pictures of his kids. Now, this guy's a cab driver. And well, one kid was a captain in the Army, and he was a doctor over in Saudi someplace. The daughter was like she was valedictorian at like New York Law School or some crap. And the other kid is in the Army, and they're going to send him to med school, and the kids are, boy, they are gorgeous. They all look like what's his name, the guy who's the black guy who was in Crimson Tide and everything. That's the real good.
Oh, looking. Denzel Washington.
Yeah, and the two kids look like Denzel. I mean, and the daughter is drop dead gorgeous, and he goes, one son's in the Army. They want to send him to med school. They want him to pony up. You know more about this than me. They want to pony up like 2 or 3 more years after med school.
Oh, yeah, they want to recoup some of their investment.
Yeah, and
right?
So the son, who's already the doctor at the University of Chicago, he goes, yeah, my son from the University of Chicago calls me last night. And he goes, Dad, tell him to screw it. I'll pay for his medical school. So the older son's paying for the younger son's medical school, which even those days had to be $50,000 a year. I mean, yeah. I'm sitting there going, what an incredible family. This guy has, and the guy's
I think what it takes is two loving parents and spending time with their kids. I think that's what the key is.
Yeah, and the guy goes, you're just not supposed to be there 24/7. 2 days a week, everybody's fine. Because I make a few bucks, I get a chance.
Well, if I ever get to that point, I might end up driving a cab because I like talking to people. And, hey, I've always had great conversations in cabs with people from all over the world.
Well, New York cab drivers, those guys, that was a whole different...
Well, New York cab driving is a little different. I mean,
that's a full-time job. You can have a career being a cab driver.
And road markings like dash lines and yellow lines and white lines, those are all optional in New York City.
That's a concept. So what do you make of the oil thing going down there?
I think the oil that comes out of Venezuela that we're going to probably push into our economy is going to go into diesel, and you might see diesel prices come down.
Because the heavy oil gets you more diesel?
I think this is a play for diesel. I think it's a play for diesel. I think the Trump administration is doing this to bring down the price of diesel because diesel is still over $4.
Yeah.
Gas here about $2.40 a gallon. Diesels is still like over $3, almost close to $4. So I think this is a play for diesel.
Yeah, do you get more diesel out of the heavier oil? I don't know. Do you?
I think you do. I think the one reason why diesel prices are so high is because the kind of oil we refine. I think it's more expensive to make diesel, and I think this is a play for the diesel.
Well, the fracking stuff is all light, I think pretty much light.
Yeah,
And we have refineries that do that.
I think it's
stuff.
For diesel and jet fuel, honestly. That's
really?
What
I thought jet fuel was...
I think it's a play for jet fuel and diesel.
Really?
Yeah, JP5, which was used to power generators, I think it's the same fuel that powers the F-16... When I was in the Navy, I'm not sure what it is now. The F-35, but that's basically diesel.
But your propeller driven stuff is real high end gasoline.
Yeah,
the jet fuel is not.
I think the jet fuel JP5 is what we use for our diesel generators on our ship, our emergency diesel generators. JP5 is just diesel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
at least it was when I was
diesel.
In the Navy,
diesel is the same as home heating oil, right?
Yeah. I think so. I'm not sure. I don't know the specifics on that, but I think this is a play for diesel and bringing down those prices.
Well, could be. Hey, thank you very much, Bud. Happy New Year. I didn't get a chance to do that last week, or maybe I did, but I'll do it again.
As Frosty says when it's Christmas time, happy birthday.
Yeah. Or if it's been a rough year, happy freaking New Year. Anyway.
Forget about it.
All right, buddy. Talk to you next week. Good luck on this class. SP Futures down 2, Nasdaq Futures up 23. We're not doing much here. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.